Welcome to the Perfectly Saint Show, episode 706, and our first episode of 2025. No, it's not. It's our second episode of 2025. We recorded on January 2nd, so I fucked this intro up already. As always, Tony is here.
I'd like to congratulate the Oakland Raiders. No, they're not even Oakland. They're Los Angeles Raiders on the achievement of the Trinity. They let their first-year head coach give his end-of-the-year press conference, fired him 2 days later, and then their GM, who was also first-year GM, was fired the day after. That's like the perfect season.
Isn't aren't they in Las Vegas now?
Yes. Wherever they are. This is a great intro.
Exiled to Vegas.
We are all over the place already. Earl is here as well.
I'm sober, I swear.
I'm going to say in 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court has deemed that incorrect.
Okay.
They deemed 5-4 that Trump has to go through with his sentencing tomorrow. So.
Oh,
I did not hear that. That's great. Great. That's
finally what it all means.
It doesn't mean shit.
At the same time, it should not be 5-4.
They're like, you are a bad boy.
Yeah, there shouldn't be four people going, you don't have to go to your sentencing. Yeah. And Jeff is here as well.
Yeah, I'm here for now.
While Jeff is here for now, we're going to do our first part of Game of the Year. Before we jump into that, Earl, did you reorganize the spreadsheet?
I did.
Okay.
I tried to reorganize it more so that we kind of have it kind of works to say way up.
So I like more, the flow of it. I like it.
I figured you were doing it for flow. I wasn't sure why. I wasn't sure if that was your reasoning.
Yes, it was more like, then you can interject certain awards that are kind of like either Tony's games or like, you know, the ones that I won off, like disappointments is a personal choice. Games that died and stuff like that. So I figured for games that died, for example, I'm like, we should also put like positive awards around that.
That's a good one.
And then I think ultimately it ended with like best new game.
You had best remake remaster. Moved that to the left a little bit. I moved it. It's now in column M.
Okay. I had that at the end because I thought that would make more sense because I think, and I could be wrong about the rules, it's like we don't necessarily recommend. Like, we recommend, they're great, but like I don't think we nominate like remakes and remasters usually for Game of the Year because we think it should be games that came out in the actual calendar year for the first time.
Yeah, you could put it on your list.
Yeah,
I don't think we include it in our group list. All right, well, since Earl has reorganized this, we will kick off with best soundtrack or score, and we have three nominees there. So we're gonna try and pick a winner here. First one in is Balatro. Second is Flock, and third is The Legend of Zelda: Echoes of Wisdom.
Okay, so I will take Flock first because I'm assuming they're the ones who played it, and that was more. I think the word that a lot of people have used in recent years is cozy. It's kind of a very subdued, very chill vibe, and I think the soundtrack matches that. A lot of it tends to be more kind of environmental noise, but like there is music, and again, very, very, very muted, very kind of chill. There are times, you know, again, like any game, there's opportunities when there's no bosses in this game, but there are certain events that happen, and the music does amp up when you're chasing stuff or when you're getting close to something. And it's a very old school design, but making it so that the music flows and you kind of know what's urgent and what's, you can just kind of relax and check out what's nearby. And that's kind of, and I hate saying that so much, that is the vibe of the game.
Okay, makes sense.
I added Balatro. Here's why I added Balatro is because it's the one game from this year. If you hear a snippet of that music, you know it's Balatro. Just same as Tetris or anything like classic like that. It's like the Balatro, and the Balatro music like adds a lot to the game. Like it just the entire vibe of the game.
It is
dictated by that music.
It is one song.
But yeah,
they utilize it, and so like if you're in the menu, like a different different portion of the song plays. If you're in the blinds, like a different portion of the song plays, and
yeah,
it all flows perfectly. Like sometimes when you hit a loading screen in a game, like the music is always going.
It's part of what makes this the greatest like drunk game of all time too, because it's just like bow, 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 bow. I can't even do it. Like, just like you're in the zone. She's picking cards. Like, I don't know. To me, like,
and then you stop playing and you close your eyes and it's still playing in your head.
You're just imagining like, jokers.
Hey, yo, right. like Elden Ring, I'm sure had fantastic music, but it's just like Balatro is like signature. It's signifying. Like, it's like you hear it, you think of that game. So that for me, there was almost no other choice. Like I was the only one I added, and I see we have Echoes of Wisdom here, and I'm like, yeah, it's Zelda music. It's good. Like there's a lot of games with like good music for sure.
Like, yeah, like memorable music.
This was like a new thing. You know what I mean? Like a new like that's the theme of that game, and you know it. So.
Yeah, it's. I mean, and I'm sure. Like if I listen to, you know, Echoes of Wisdom soundtrack, I'd be like, oh yeah, I remember this part from here or wherever. But like, I think you're right, Jeff. Like the Balatro soundtrack, you're gonna hear that, like, and it's instantly gonna be like the Mario theme or the Tetris music or, for me, it's like the Pac-Man DX menu music, like just. It's just something that gets stuck in your head.
And
like
you instantly
recognize it.
It's harder to hum than those tunes, but it is like instantly recognizable. Like yep. So for me, that's my pick. I had no other pick. Like it was like that was it.
Earl, I'm assuming you put Echoes of Wisdom in here as well.
Yeah, that's because I wanted something with them more than two choices.
No, yeah. That makes sense.
So and again, like Zelda music is usually pretty good, but like, yes, I don't.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
But yeah,
I'm sure if we were to pull out like the Final Fantasy soundtrack and that kind of
thing. Yeah, it's probably phenomenal.
I think Rebirth would have been up there if any of us played it. So
I did. I played it. It's the Final Fantasy VII soundtrack, except you know, which is a great soundtrack, except it's the same soundtrack from 25 years ago.
Well, I was wondering about that because I was debating putting Paper Mario, but I'm like, because it does remix music from it does modernize the music from that game.
Yes,
like, it is remixing music, so it's kind of like the Oscars where like you can't win Best Original Score if like a lot of it is based off of music you.
Yes.
Hi, Earl. Where'd you go?
So I think we're voting for one game here.
Other two. So we only have three here. That one that I didn't put it in. I'm not going to put it in now. But and it's very similar to kind of my argument against Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Indiana Jones in the Great Circle has great music,
but it's music from the game.
It is music from the movies. Like it has like its own music as well. I think Tony, but. Yeah, the music that you recognize is the indie music.
Yes, whenever something happens, the classic old soundtrack comes on, and that's great. That's awesome. It's a good use of the music.
Yeah,
but that music was not created for this game. They took it somewhere else.
Yeah, it would be like me nominating in a Star Wars movie, like one of the Star Wars soundtracks for a game, and it's like it's just the movie soundtrack.
Yeah, I was also gonna say John Williams is just cheating. That's like the ultimate.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
It's the ultimate cheat score for score, so.
So I think we're voting for one out of these three here.
Well, I feel like we know which one it's going to be, but officially, do we all want to vote for Balatro to make sure?
Sure, I will vote for Balatro.
So Balatro gets the first win of the night, getting best soundtrack and score. And the other two nominees in the category Flock and Echoes of Wisdom are the runners up. That brings us into best trailer, which we had a discussion prior to the show starting that we fucked up with this. There probably have been a ton of
amazing ones, yeah,
great trailers throughout the year, but these are all basically from the Game Awards. I'm gonna read them off what we have here. And one just dropped in, so we now have four. Elden Ring, Night Rain, The Outer Worlds 2, Shadow Labyrinth, and Split Fiction.
Before we discuss this, this is something we should probably discuss ahead of time. I will say I added fiction for this reason, but also I was just thinking through this. What do you consider best trailer? And I know we're about to have an award for that, because I'm thinking, is it one that's like the most entertaining, most over the top, or is it the one like I'm thinking Metroid Prime 4 was announced, like re-announced this year, and that's really great. Like, oh, it's gonna get me amped up for this game that it's actually coming out soon. But like, the trailer itself wasn't anything special.
I think it could be both and or. You know what I mean? Like the excitement of that game being announced and it being a good trailer, or just the fact that it was announced. I think this could fit anything.
Okay, then again, that will be something for next year. So with that said, I will start from my spot, because I literally just added this as I was talking.
Yeah.
Split Fiction came to mind because it's a game.
Yeah, it looks cool.
We did not know anything about, and within 3 minutes, they saw me, I need to get this game in March.
Yeah, it looks very cool, Split Fiction.
The two here that jump out to me, and I like the Split Fiction trailer and the Elden Ring trailer. The two that jump out to me, and for different reasons, are Shadow Labyrinth and The Outer Worlds 2.
Yeah.
Shadow Labyrinth, because it's so fucking weird.
It's so out of left field.
Yeah, I think it's very much like what Earl just said about Split Fiction. Like,
it's like, it's not even that like the trailer is anything. It's just that like you're watching this trailer, you're like, what is this? Is that Pac-Man? Wait, what? What? You know, it's more on what the game is. And I think The Outer Worlds 2 is more about like the trailer.
The trailer itself is phenomenal.
It's very fun. It's very funny. It's recognizing the flaws of the first game. You know what I mean? Like, it's very tongue-in-cheek. Like, it understands. And that's kind of where I, like, kind of lean towards that. Like, I think Outer Worlds 2 is a pretty good trailer.
I love the Outer Worlds 2 trailer. Like, just how they intro it is just, like, from the developers of, like, you know, from you know, they name all these, like, great games, and then they're like, hey, we're the guys that did 2. And then they get to, like, Fallout 3, 2.
Yeah.
Which is New Vegas.
Yeah, which is, like, I think we gotta give it to it for that. It's just so
so
self-deprecating.
I do have this style of humor. It is very, very refreshing. I don't often think we see, and I think I have video game companies don't often make fun of themselves. They don't really know how to do that. And
they're so busy trying to get taken seriously that they would never poke fun at themselves, right?
Yeah, and Obsidian's just like, hey. At least for this game, because like I think Avowed is very much a very serious trailer, right?
Yeah.
But The Outer Worlds 2, like, it's comedy space Fallout, like, kind of what it is. Like, it's a goofy world that just makes fun of capitalism in a capitalist product. Like, the trailer's fantastic from my side, but yeah. You guys want to talk about Elden Ring, Night Rain, or?
I mean, just the fact that, like, as I was watching the trailer, I'm like, oh, it's Elden Ring, you know. It was one of those things.
And it's like, oh, it's Elden Ring with, like, two people, and you're playing.
For 45 minutes.
Like, the gameplay is different, right? It's like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which it was just funny, like. My reaction was the opposite of Jess. It was like, Oh, it's Elden.
I mean, yeah, it was just like, I did not expect anything new from them. So like to get that was pretty awesome. Like, and it was a good trailer, you know, but I don't know. I just kind of leaned towards The Outer Worlds 2 for self-awareness and I don't know.
Tony?
Yeah, I like the Elder Yeah, I can't even speak today.
That's where I'm at in about 10 minutes.
The Elder Worlds.
Yeah, the Elder Worlds. The Outer Worlds too. Like, it's the one trailer that, like, sticks out in my mind from the year. Like, it's the only one that kind of gets that memory going. Like,
yeah,
you see so many trailers, and they kind of just all, like, fade to the background because you're really just watching them to see that the game that you really want was announced.
I do.
And that one kind of, like, did hit other spots. Like, it entertained me. And that doesn't often happen.
Yeah. I do kind of, like, in a way, split fiction a little bit, just because, like, it totally sold me on that game.
Yeah, and like, it's a brand new IP. We didn't know it existed beforehand. And it sold me on what the game needed to be. It looks great. It's fantastic. It's out in, you know, I guess the timetable of when it's out, but the fact that they were able to sell me on this initial trailer. The only one I would add to now, and this is just more kind of the freak out people had to what it represented, would be the first Echoes of Wisdom trailer, because I think people were surprised that Nintendo finally made Zelda playable.
That would be great. Yeah. I still kind of go Outer Worlds too, just because it's.
Oh, no, I would, but I just wanted to bring that up. Right. Like,
yeah, no.
You mentioned like an emotional reaction. I'm like, oh, I remember.
I was like, what is this?
Like, oh, Zelda's playable.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing from the four of us, the Outer Worlds 2 is our best trailer.
I think so.
What are our runners up here?
The runner up is Split Fiction. It's definitely Split Fiction. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're moving on to our first, Jeff, myself, and Earl are going to take a break because this is Tony's strategy game of the year.
Yeah.
And Tony is going to he's going to pick a winner from Frostpunk, Norland, Sins of a Solar Empire 2, and Age of Mythology Retold.
I'm going to start off by saying this was not the list of games I would have expected at the beginning of this year. It's was kind of a bad year for strategy games, kind of a down year. There's a couple that are coming out at the beginning of next year that I thought would come out this year. Civ 7, for an example. Mm-hmm. But we're kind of left with these games. I like Frostpunk. Frostpunk 2. I think that it's a fun game to play. The thing that bothers me about it is it's so cynical and so like it's not a fun world to be in. If you're building playing a city builder, I like to build like something cool and something good to look at, and that world is all about like everyone's going to die, this is the end of it all. It just feels so dark all the time. Norland is on the list. It's probably one of the strategy games I enjoyed the most. I can't pick it though because it's still in early access and it's missing a bunch of features. I think it's going to be a super super cool game by the end of next year, and it'll probably be on my game of the year list, I imagine. Sins of a Solar Empire 2, super cool space RTS game in a living universe. It looks really, really cool. Graphically, it's probably one of the most beautiful space sims you'll ever see in your entire life. There's a lot of game there, but like the game is missing some features you'd expect from this sort of thing. Like for instance, a campaign. There's no campaign.
That's weird. The first one had a campaign, right?
Well, so the first one had a campaign as DLC.
Oh.
And this one seems to be going that same route. Mm. And I can't like, I don't, it's something I knock you for.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Now you can get in the sandbox universe and play around, and that's really really cool. But there really should be a campaign of some sort just to tie it all around. There's all these factions. How do they interrelate? You need to like give that to me. I shouldn't have to pay extra for that.
Yeah, it's not like a World War II strategy game where you kind of already it's inherent. You know who the factions are. This is like a fantasy of space, a science fiction fantasy. Yeah. Empire, and you don't know shit about it.
I don't know any of these people. I don't know why they're complaining or why they're fighting, and give me a reason why.
Yeah,
that part of it. Which leaves me with Age of Mythology retold. I really, really enjoyed playing through this game. When you compare it to the original Age of Mythology, this game is probably three times as long. They took the campaign, they really fleshed it out. They added a bunch of cool new features. There are now additional factions that you can have in the game. It's like it's when you like take a game that was, I don't know if it was a classic. It was probably like the more the ugly stepchild of the
Age of Empires type thing, yeah.
Yeah. But they remade it completely into a game that's really super playable and really super fun. So that's probably the best of a bad lot of strategy games for 2024.
Age of Mythology retold, or that is just the best four. That's the lot, the four of a bad season.
Yes.
Okay. So what is our winner then, Tony?
That is our winner. Age of Mythology.
Retold. All right. One question for you on that, since I mean, I'm sure we have talked about it multiple times. I'm sure I've asked this question. It's a traditional RTS, right? Like you kind of like build up, you get resources, yep. You build absolutely. Up and yep. Okay.
There are some,
you might finally get into that.
You should. Some of the resources are cool. Like, so you have your standard like wood and gold.
Yeah.
That stuff. There's also faith as a resource, and how you build faith depends on who you're playing as.
Okay.
So if you're playing as the Greeks, you build faith by sending people to worship at the temple. If you're playing as the Norse, they get faith by fighting.
That so makes sense.
It's kind of cool that they make that so different for each one of the factions. It's really fun.
That is pretty cool. All right, so Tony's strategy game of the year is Age of Mythology Retold, which is on Game Pass, and that's a great transition into our Game Pass game of the month, of which we only have six nominees because we forgot about it for 10 of the 12 months, actually 11 of the 12 months. I added Indiana Jones and the Great Circle yesterday.
Yeah. I think half of these are added today.
That's okay. Yeah. I added Age of Mythology and Call of Duty yesterday.
And I added Dungeons of the Hindenburg
and Hellblade. So we have six here that we remember for Game Pass. And they are the big games, as Jeff said. I'm going to read them off here. Pal World in January, Hellblade 2 in May, Dungeons of Hinterberg in July, Age of Mythology Retold in September, Call of Duty Black Ops 6 in November, and Indiana Jones and the Great Circle in December.
All right. This is easy for me. It's Dungeons of Hinterberg.
I think Jeff and I are on the same page, and I think you and Tony.
Oh, really?
That's why I added it. I think it's if not for Game Pass, to me, I think a Game Pass game of the game of the month or Game Pass game of the year is just one of those games that I think I wouldn't have tried if it wasn't on Game Pass. And I think Dungeons of Hinterberg is just a super cute, charming RPG. Again, you know, the term is cozy, and I think that was something I didn't expect going into this year. It's not a game. Honestly, it's a game Jeff introduced me to. But I really enjoyed my time with it. And again, yeah. I think it would have been, even if you were into it, it wouldn't have been a game I would have gone out of my way to try if it was not on Game Pass.
To me, it's just straight up like best game of the year, like one of the best games of the year. Like it really is. And so the fact that it got to Game Pass and so more people got to try it is awesome.
And I think that I probably rank a couple of these higher than like on my game of the year list over Dungeons of Hinterberg. Maybe not 100% sure. I'd have to look at my top 10. Yes. There's a couple here that I rank above it. But in terms of this, I think you guys are absolutely right. Like for me, if I want to play a Call of Duty game, I would buy it. Like if it wasn't on Game Pass, I'd buy Black Ops 6. And kind of the same for Indy. Like if Indy wasn't on Game Pass, like I was gonna play that game regardless.
Yeah.
Like I was gonna buy that game it being on Game Pass, awesome. Like,
yeah,
it allowed me to buy another game in December as opposed to buy indie.
I would have bought both those games, but I still, I don't know. To me, I rank Dungeons above them.
No, I mean, I get for you, like, you would put it above. Call of Duty and Indiana Jones are higher on my list.
Hey, Call of Duty,
really? Dungeons, you thought Call of Duty is better?
Preview for next week. Dungeons of Hinterberg is 10th on my list.
It will be much lower on my list, but I also feel like Call of Duty is just cheating. Because it's like the biggest game in the world every year. If you know, yeah, Game sure. Pass does not change that.
Right. Yeah. It was like everyone was going to play Call of Duty Black Ops 6 regardless. I mean, maybe we wouldn't. Or if we did, like Jeff and I maybe play it in March, like when it finally goes on sale for $45 as opposed to being 60 or 70. You know, we probably all get around to playing it at some point, but. Yeah, it being on Game Pass, I don't think benefited it at all. I agree with you guys that Dungeons of Hinterberg definitely benefited from being on Game Pass. Probably Pal World too.
I think Pal World, looking at it. But I think that was also more being on PC. Was it on PC Game Pass as well?
I believe so. Yeah, because I remember Sean bitching. Because he couldn't get it to work right, and he ended up buying it on Steam.
Sean and I were playing on Steam, and we still couldn't get it to like.
So it didn't work even after he bought it.
Well, I mean, it launched in early access, which I think is kind of the problem. Like Pal World, if you play it now, it's not necessarily a different game, but it's like fully fleshed out, and like everything works now.
Got it.
So, yeah, it launched, but I think it had been in development for so long they just wanted it out the door. Not ready in a lot of ways.
So unless like Tony is vehemently against the Dungeons of Hinterberg winning this, I think that might be where we're at.
As you already know, I don't like Dungeons of Hinterberg, as I said at the show earlier. I would not, if it hadn't been on Game Pass, I wouldn't have played it to begin with.
Yeah,
it was nice to have Game Pass so that I could try it out and decide.
You still didn't like it.
You don't remember me like hating on it and you being upset? It was a whole conversation.
I move on. I'm like Donald Trump. It's just like we do a handshake, we move on.
That's who you're comparing yourself to.
Yeah, I'm just like Donald Trump.
All right. Moving on.
The Donald Trump Game of the Year is next category.
Let's
right?
do that, yeah.
Yeah. What died in 2024.
On that note, Hope.
Well, we know the actual winner here, so we'll build up to it because
yes. Well, I'll start the back since Jeff already called it Hope. I had moved Hope to the end, but Jeff already spoiled it, so we'll move bottom top. Skull and Bones, which it's alive, I guess. Like it's on life support. Well, it's there.
It's came out. The reason I added it is precisely because of that, because I think it was more interesting when it was vaporware. It came out and it's like nobody cares. Like it was much more interesting when it's going both in development. It's like now it's out. It's like, oh yeah. And we did the recap last year and I kept on forgetting it came out last year.
Yeah, absolutely. Similarly, Foam Stars.
Not dead yet either. But
yeah. So I'm not sure if those two are front runners here. Suicide Squad came out and they have announced they are ceasing support for it. It's not dead, you'll still be able to play it, but it's
nice support. It's going dead.
And but then what
the winner.
one that actually did legitimately die, and it was like it lived 11 days. Concord.
Not even days. As a what is his name? Oh crap!
Scaramucci.
Scaramucci. There we go.
Yeah, Scaramucci. Yeah.
Didn't even ask the full Scaramucci.
Concord is a wild one. Did any of you play? Like, I don't. None of us bought it, but did any of you play the beta?
I think I even had time.
I played a couple rounds of the beta and it was whatever. But yeah, it came out and in less than 2 weeks, completely gone.
It's so strange to see, like, normally a corporation, just to save face, will leave something up longer than that, even if it is like an utter failure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they did try to save face. They were like, we're going to, you know, we're taking it offline, we're going to retool it, and we'll continue to support it. And then like 2 weeks later, like, just kidding, it's dead. Everybody's fine. Get out of here.
And then they released a, you know, one of those shorts in Secret Level, which was actually a really good short in that anthology. But that's not what that game was either. So, yeah, I think Concord is the winner here, unless Jeff wants to make a really strong argument for Hope, which I think also died.
That's a pretty strong argument. Pretty strong argument. I got none left.
I mean, I think that's going to be perpetual for the next few years.
I think it's going to be perpetual forever. But yeah. We'll just let Hope die. We left it behind years ago.
That is possible. Maybe it died in 2016, and we revived it for a moment over the last 4 years. But
I had a moment. I had a moment.
Anyway, moving on to our next award, and it's an individual choice for all four of us. It's a 2024 game we wish we got to play, and for we wrote this years ago, but didn't because reasons. And I mean, sure, there are probably reasons why we did not get to these games. So, Jeff, yeah. What is your game and what is your reason?
My game is Stalker 2. My reason is mostly hard drive space because it's gigantic.
It's Call of Duty size.
Yeah, but also hearing that like it is extremely flawed, I was like, well, I don't want to take up a lot of space for a game that like is fucked up. And I understand the developers are under like extreme circumstances to develop a game. That was it because of that. But also because like I had heard about this game made me sound like something I would love. It was like a game of hard survival and there's not like a lot of plot and you're just kind of in this world trying to survive. And I was like, fuck yeah, this sounds amazing. It looks amazing, and I know that it ended up on some top 10 lists, so I kind of wish I did play it, but like just because of the barrier of entry sort of thing, I did not play it.
Right, so that is Jeff's game. Earl, what is yours?
Mine is UFO 50. I think I mentioned this last week when we were going over 2024. Honestly, the big and short of it is I don't really play games on my PC. My laptop's like a decade old, and I put anything on my work computer. If it gets ported to a console of some sort, I do want to check it out. I think the idea is very novel and cute. And I mean, out of 50 games, you have to imagine he's 5 or more decent to check out, if not more.
Yeah. Yeah, there's got to be like, 10-20% of those games are probably pretty cool.
Yeah.
Tony?
I wrote down here, Call of Duty?
Chris we're not and I sure were which year?
No, I Chris and I were talking before the show, and I had the day off today. And I had a chance to like sit around and look at the list of games that came out in 2024 and say, you know, prior to our Game of the Year podcast, is there anything I want to play? What can I do? And I'm looking at this list. I'm like, there's not a single game on here I feel like I need to play for this. I haven't played Call of Duty. I might at some point. It's like the one game on there that I was like, yeah, maybe I should try that. But I kind of know what I'm going to feel about it. So I don't really like feel the urge. But for my end, there were fewer games that came out in 2024, that I was actually interested in to begin with. So I managed to get through all the ones I really wanted to.
Got it. And mine is Dragon Age: The Veilguard. Came out in October. And for some reason, at that point, I was like, I'm gonna play Dragon Age 2 and and Inquisition. I finally finished these two games. And I did, but then I did not want to play Dragon Age of the Hill.
I cannot believe you took on that like project. Like,
I now know all the Dragon Age, Jeff.
Good job.
But I did not get to the Veilguard yet because I was a little bit Dragon Aged out by the time the end of the year rolled around. So,
shocker. Cool.
I have it. I got it cheap on sale. So I have it. I'm ready to play it when I get around to feeling good about it. But I just burned myself out on Dragon Age. So those are games we didn't get to play. And that moves us into the best boss fight of the year.
I think this is a stacked category. I do.
This is all Jeff.
Really? All Jeff.
Is it all me? One is Tony, I think.
Yes, one is Tony.
All right, so I'll read these off. Count Janor, Jeff?
Janor? Okay. I think you don't Janor. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Path of Exile 2, Wako Taco?
Sure.
Yeah, and from Astrobot, the second to last boss blind in Balatro, and the final boss Null in Zelda Echoes of Wisdom. You guys want to break these down? Because these were put in by you and Tony. So
I'm still sober or not sober, but Count Geonor is just it's like. If you could imagine the best ARPG boss fight ever, it's kind of that. It's just like, it kind of has everything. Like, he's just bouncing around arena, doing different shit. Like, there's points where, like, mist will form around the arena, and he'll disappear into the mist. And then, like, he'll send out little minions, like little guys you could kill. And killing them refills your health potions. Then he starts coming out, like, he has phases, like, you know, in the first phase, he'll switch between human and wolf, and the second phase, he turns into pure wolf, and he'll do that shit every once in a while, where he goes into the mist, disappear on you, and you have to, like, fend shit off, refill your health, then he'll come back, and he does these, like, lightning bolts from the sky type shit that you have to avoid. It's just kind of like, if you could imagine like a boss fight from Diablo being like super engaging and you had to think about every phase of it, that's Count Geonor.
Okay. Is that the one you sent to me? Like a little.
Yeah, clip? That's the end of the first boss. The first act of the game, that's the boss. There's plenty of other like really memorable, like awesome bosses in it, but like there's something about Geonor that he was like that big marker that was so hard for you early on, you know what I mean? And then like you go back to it, you're like, I smoked this guy. I know everything he's gonna do. You know, that's kind of that fight, you know, it's like it's so scary and shit early on, and then like going back to it, it's still hard, but you're just like you respect it. You're just like, again, picture like a Diablo fight that's just so engaging, like where every part of it is like, I gotta pay attention to this, I gotta pay attention to that. Like,
got it. All right, so tell us about Wako Taco.
I guess like the
Wako like, Taco,
the octopus-y yes. boss in Astrobot. What was so cool about like first off, all the I would almost nominate Astrobot and as like a general thing because like. Every boss fight in Astrobot is like the best platformer fight you've ever been in. Like they're all so good. But that one like blew me away because it's kind of hard. You're like fighting the octopus and all of a sudden he like retreats, like he like runs away from you. And there's like this long tunnel of platforming you have to do near the end of the like so like you fought like two phases of the boss. He retreats, he splits the ocean, and then like there's a platforming section you have to make through the ocean, and then get to the next platform and then kill him. And if you die at any point in that, you're starting over. I don't know, it's just there's something about that that is like really neat.
Yeah, it's a really cool sequence. Like The boss itself, you know, it's I like all the boss fights, and
I think they're all great. I think they're all great. Yeah. Like I have no issues.
But to a degree, they are still like 3D platforming bosses. Like hit them three times. Like different way. This just adds in that extra like
that element. Right,
you hit me three times.
Now run, like swing on vines and shit. Like
run this gauntlet, and also like do it quickly because I'm pushing these waves at you. And if they hit you, if you can't avoid them, you're gonna have to start this piece over. You're gonna lose a life. So. It's a really cool fight. And then you want to tell us about Null before
Null is just
about like, Balatro.
I think Zelda games always have a cool like final boss fight, but I think like the last two have been extremely like difficult. And Null was like 9 phases long. There's like a part where like you swim underwater in 2D. It's crazy. Like I just remember being like, "Oh shit!" I underprepared for this. I was like kind of like taken aback by how intensive they made their final boss fight. So for me, that was like very memorable. So it had to be on the list.
All right, and that brings us to the second to last boss blind in Balatro, Tony.
Yeah. So you guys have all played Balatro. Yep. As you play through a run, the game is tracking your tendencies. So it's tracking what hands you play, what suits you play, whatever. The first few boss blinds, they're random, based on whatever seed you happen to be playing for. But that second to last one is always a boss based on how you've been playing and trying to break whatever you're trying to do.
Oh, really? I never noticed that. That's cool.
So, like, if you've built your deck
or straight
clubs, right? Yeah. You'll get to that, and then clubs will be disabled.
Oh,
that'll be the boss blind. Or like, if you've been playing, like, maybe you've been your jokers are set up to play like straights, and you have a lot of money, and the money is the multiplier on one of your other jokers. It'll say, okay, if you play a straight, it's going to set your money to zero. So that boss is always set up to break you. And so it's always a challenge every time, no matter how good a run you've put together. And you always have to have like a game plan of what's going to happen if what I'm trying to do in this run isn't going to work. Like,
yeah, you have to improvise.
Yeah. So like the final boss blind is always like a challenge, but it's never like directly based on what you're trying to do to get through the run.
I never realized that was the second to last. Like they did that.
Second to last every time.
Neither did I.
So
I like that. I don't know, guys. Like my personal pick is Count Geonor, but I know no one has played Path of Exile. I'm cool with Balatro. I don't know. I'm cool with Astrobot too. So I'm cool with all these. Actually, these are all great boss fights.
You're
amongst yourselves. I'm going to order a beer.
He puts on a category. He's like, yeah, you folks figure it out. I do like the Balatro one, but I've also seen the Astrobot one, and I wish I gotten to play Astrobot because that does actually seem like a really fun use of platforming mechanics in a boss fight.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'm good with either one of these, which isn't helpful.
Because technically speaking, the people, because I think the people would break the tie on Jeff and Tony, and I assume they'd spit it one and one.
Well, Jeff said he's good with Balatro too. So
all right, Balatro wins.
He said, Path of Exile was the one that he really wanted, but we didn't play it, so he didn't really care. But then Balatro or Astrobot, he'd be cool with. I'm fine with Balatro. I think, Wako Taco or Waco Taco or however you want to pronounce it is an excellent platforming boss fight. It's really cool. I'm fine with Balatro, though, if you guys are.
Yeah, I'm fine.
All right. Yeah. And then I'm going to gray out Astrobot as the runner up there. That moves us in to best multiplayer, and we have four games here. Helldivers 2, Star Wars Hunters, Black Ops 6, and Marvel Rivals. Before we break into kind of like talking about these games, I think all four we need to talk about. The only one that I played with anybody, you know, I played these games with people, but the only one that I played this game with people I know is Helldivers 2. When I played with Tony and Walt and Sean, Black Ops 6, played with people. Star Wars Hunters, I think I played with people. They might have been bots, not sure. and Marvel Rivals, which I didn't play, but I assume you played with people, Earl.
Yeah, it's just not people I know either.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Why don't you tell us about Marvel Rivals, though?
Oh, I was going to say, Marvel Rivals and Star Wars Hunters are both here for the same reason, which is apparently I do enjoy MOBAs. I do enjoy basically Overwatch, right? I do enjoy Overwatch as well. But they're both, you know, squad-based PvP games with the character-driven. Each character has unique abilities and skills and weapons and stuff like that. I would try to give the edge to Star Wars in this regard because I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. And even if I was, it's a bunch of, like, there's a Wookiee, there's Stormtroopers, I think there's two Ewoks together.
Yep.
So it's just a random, it's not like, oh, you're playing as Chewie and Han and Luke and Vader. It's like, no, it's like a random assortment of scrubs. And the fact of the matter is, it's just a really good game. And I think Chris and I, when we discussed this earlier in the year, it's also made for mobile. So it's like 5 minutes. There are times when I've played Overwatch and or the multiplayer game where you kind of know you lost way before the game's over. And it's just like that tedious crawl of like, we have to get this over with now. But like, you have to wait until it's done. This is like 5 minutes, easy peasy. You just move on, you try another one. Marvel Rival, kind of the polar opposite. And I think it's still fun, but a lot of it is driven by the fact like, oh man, I get to play as all these great Marvel heroes that I know and love and see how they are incorporated. I was out today. But I want to fire up the game to tomorrow or sometime this weekend. It just added the Fantastic Four. I want to see how the Invisible Woman plays. I want to see how Human Torch plays. I want to see how, you know, they interact with each other. I think one of the big additions to this, and I think Marvel's been really good about this in video games since going back to X-Men Legends, are kind of like the synergy attacks. Like, you can play with like Rocket and Groot, and Rocket can go on his shoulder, and like the player still controls him. But you get certain abilities now that you didn't have you played separately. So it also adds an element of like, not just like team build, but like, how does this team cooperate if you put, you know, these two and these two together? Like, what new abilities do they have? What new powers, what new perks, what new, you know, mayhem can you cause?
Cool. I guess I will talk about Black Ops 6. I don't know if Jeff is back yet.
I'm back.
Oh, okay, so Jeff has also played some Black Ops 6.
Yeah.
It is Call of Duty.
Yeah,
It is. Like, there's not much more, but it is, like, there are Call of Duties that aren't fun to play online, multiplayer with other people, because, you know, either the maps are bad, the guns are bad, the mechanics are bad. Like, it's all still Call of Duty, but there are good ones and there are bad ones. And this is a really, really good one. To the point that I prestiged over the holiday. I jumped in today cause there's a Squid Game mode going on. It was really dumb. I didn't like it, but like, it got me to check it out.
It's something, you know, new. It's,
yeah.
But something like happening. Yeah.
It's red light, green light, where like some music plays and then it stops and you have to stop. If you don't stop, you die. I have not seen the show, so I assume that's a game that they play in the show.
I mean, it's a children's game, but it's, yes, it's a game they play in the show as well. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm very curious how that works in a video game, because I feel like it's very easy to kind of stop. Like, part of the appeal of the game is like human nature is like, you know, like if you ended up running and like you're on one foot, like it's the balancing issue. Where like in a video game, you don't really have that issue in most.
So I quit. So they have made it don't like stop. completely. Do not move at all. That means like don't move your camera to look around. Don't touch your fucking controller when the music stops. There's a way you can kind of game it, I guess, is like so you're running down it looks like a football field. You're in an arena, you're running down the field, and music plays, music stops, and like if you're moving when it stops or you move after it stops, you get shot, you're out. The way you progress in it is like you have to reach the end of the field, and then everybody who reaches the end of the field then starts over again. So like you keep going until there's a winner, basically. I played one round of it, watched everybody, and was like I got eliminated immediately because I stopped and then I looked around and I pressed the right stick, which is the camera stick, and got shot and was like, what the hell? And then people were talking that like you just cannot touch your controller once the music stops playing. So that I think that's how they worked it out. Anyway, Black Ops, really good maps. They're adding more to it. Don't have much more to say. I don't think Jeff does either, but
no.
Tony, tell us about Helldivers 2.
He's cut off.
What?
You faded out for a second.
I was going to say, unlike the other games on this list, it's like, this is a pure co-op game. And it's like, it's madness. There are so many enemies. So much.
I've not played it, but it seems like really goofy. You know,
it
can be.
I think the people who play it are pretty goofy. I think that's probably more.
It has a sense of humor, from what I can tell. It's like democracy.
It does. And that whole, this very tongue-in-cheek, if you like, see some of the references they make and some of the stuff you do, they kind of hide it, but you're actually like a oppressing force, and like people are trying to get away from you. You're the baddies. It is so much fun to play, and like so many random things happen. The emergent gameplay is something you don't normally get in games that you play with your friends. It's really so fun. And the fact that they have like somebody actually running the campaign as opposed to just like having random events happen is really, really cool.
Yeah, I do like that there's like a game master kind of like manipulating things behind the scenes. That's neat. I do wish, and this is more me thing, because like I didn't play as much as you guys did when it first came out. So then like when I jumped in with you, at first we were kind of like evenly matched, even though you were a few levels higher than me. But then like a couple days later, or like a week later, you guys were way ahead of me. And so like you had already unlocked like extra drop downs and extra like new weapons. And I don't know if it makes you extra strong, but you just had like better armor, and I think you don't get like more hit points, I don't think, but you can like equip certain, you can equip things to give you buffs, and
it's gear in place of it.
You're getting skills as you level up. You're getting, you can do these call downs from your ship above. So you're just better equipped to go into battle. And like I'm out there with like my assault rifle and like doing no damage, having to wait extra long to pull my things down.
Like rail gun and
we could, if we played on easy, I probably am at that point more helpful. Yeah. But then it's boring for you guys because like you've already done the easy stuff and you're equipped for higher levels now. So that was my only complaint, was like, oh, all right. But then I think we all fell off of it for a little bit. So
yeah, they just added a new faction. But like that's the thing about these kind of games. Like, all right, I've played through this world a few times, and all right, I'm done. I'm ready to move on to the next game.
Yeah. It was super fun, and it's the only multiplayer game that I played with people I know. So that's the one that's going to get my vote here. I got Tony?
Path of Exile, yep. Man. Right
me
here.
Too.
What was that, Jeff?
I said I got Path of Exile right here. Let's play.
But it's not on the is.
And I don't want to buy. I don't want to buy Path of Exile when it's going to be free.
It better.
It better be free.
No, and better.
Oh, like yeah,
free
yeah.
And it's, better than it is right
yeah,
now.
It's going to come out with 7 acts instead of 3.
I'm paying to playtest. Yes, this
you game. Are. Yep. So I think Tony and I are Helldivers 2. Earl.
My big problem with Helldivers 2 is more so that I got to associate that you folks had all moved on, and I like to your point, I do want to play because I feel like so many people who are still around are probably so advanced that I just would be like another person, and like yeah, it's not fun when you're like the guy who's like being carried. So yes, I have no qualm with it. What I've seen, like I said, I enjoyed how they rolled out the game. I enjoyed how they opened the frontiers. I enjoyed a sense of humor. I enjoy like, you know, like doing this Starship Trooper thing, especially in a year where there's an actual Starship Trooper game that nobody paid attention to. So yeah, I'm all for Helldivers.
And Jeff, any objections to Helldivers 2?
No, based on everything I've seen this year, yeah, I would vote for 2, even not having played it.
All right, cool. Helldivers 2, our best multiplayer game of the year. Moving on to best game we played, not from 2024. Jeff, what do you got?
Mine is Inscription, which I think came out in 2021. Card game. If it came out this year, it would have been my game of the year. If I had played it that year, it would have been my game of the year. It's a card game with like an insane amount of atmosphere. And once you beat the big boss, then it turns into Earthbound for a little bit. And then it turns into like another game. It's like 3 games in one. It's like if this amazing card game came out and then there was 2 sequels to it and that was all in one game. That's basically how I feel about Inscription. And besides like the fact that I love the card game in it, like the atmosphere around it and kind of like the hints at a story, and sometimes they'll go into like found footage. Like you see this guy in the woods finding a fucking tape. You're like, holy shit, what is this game? It's so weird and crazy, but it's also an addictive card game. God damn, dude. It's one of the best games I've ever played. I know you didn't feel the same way about it, Chris, but like, man.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I didn't come away quite as high as you, but I did like it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Tony, what do you got?
So I played through a number of older games this year. I played through Witcher 3. I played through Skyrim. I played through Pokemon Violet. The game that kind of stuck with me the most was Fallout 4, which I don't know whether it was I didn't give it enough of a chance when it came out, which I thought it was great when it came out, but like having gone back and played the whole thing and played through all the DLC, this is one of the best games ever made. This game is fantastic. I love it. So going back to Fallout was like an experience. I really, really enjoyed that.
Hey, this feels like justice for me because I remember when it came out, I was like, no, dude, it's really great. Like, I still don't have any problems with it, really. Like, it's pretty decent.
We'll talk more Fallout 4 in another category.
Oh, sure. Later.
For a different reason, but we'll talk more Fallout 4 soon. Mine is, and I struggled with this. I did not really know. I looked over all the games I played and was like, what's my favorite of the year? And I chose the one that I put the most time into. It was for the first half of the year. It was kind of like my workout game. And that's a Theater Rhythm Final Bar Line, which is the Final Fantasy music game. And I played it when I was like riding the bike, just working out.
What is working out?
Riding the bike.
No, what is that?
Oh, it's this thing that you do sometimes to burn.
Where I count every second and every calorie that I'm. Yeah, I hate it.
Well, the machine does that for you. So like, but,
dude, I would do like the bike, right?
Yeah.
And like 30 seconds felt like 30 minutes.
So that's why, like, I'll play a game like this. Recently, I'm playing like Lego games. Like, it's like you're active, but like you're playing a game.
Like, not think about it.
Yeah, it doesn't take much thought to play like a Lego game or like Theater Rhythm.
Maybe that's it.
Get your mind off of just like, all right, I'm just riding this bike. Like,
but if you do it that way, I wonder if you don't stress yourself enough to like get your heart beat up to like, you know what I mean? Like,
you can work up a sweat. Like, I'm still doing like 18, 19 miles an hour on the bike.
Jesus Christ.
So,
all right.
You're still moving. Like, that's the big thing, right? It's like you're doing something. So anyway, that's mine. Earl, do you have a game from not this year that
I was trying to think about it while you folks are talking, and I think the one that, again, to your point, I was just going through the games I played this year, and I kind of focused more on this year or games that were overlapping from 2023. But I had gone back and played A Way Out, and you know, as much as I'm so on It Takes Two, it is that studio, which is why I'm also excited for Spit Fiction, makes very unique co-op experiences, and A Way Out was just the original. And just, again, replaying that and remembering, like, it is a really fun story where you get to play as these two, and I played as the other the con. I mean, again, very similar beats, but like just the differences, and like replaying the ending where, like, spoilers, I guess, where you have to do battle with each other. For both ends.
Shit, you know, really?
Yeah, they do betray each other at the end. Apologies.
That's okay.
But like, me and my friend wanted to do both. So you can just go back. And like, so I think originally I won the fight. So we went back and just kind of faked it so that he would win the fight. And it was just one of those experiences. Because you actually have to. It's an actual cop game. You have to work together. You have to.
Yeah. All their games are like that.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's something that you don't see that often. There's a lot of cops.
Yeah.
It's like, you can just do whatever you want to do. And it will work out. Or you have to be within close proximity, but it's fine. This one, you have this communication. There's like, okay, I'm pressing up. You press up now. I press. There's a part where you're trying to escape from the prison, and you're just kind of walking up shaft, and you have to like time the momentum so you're going back and forth, and not like one person going really quickly, so you're not like tapping buttons and stuff like that.
This sounds like a great way for me to get divorced.
Because you are working together. You are working together, and it does
not... Yeah, we try.
It does not technically penalize you for, you know, taking your time most of the time. There are, you know, there are car chases and stuff like that. That might be a bit different, but there's a lot of fun set pieces. They make it engaging, and it doesn't overstay its welcome. I think it was probably like 5 hours or something like that, if that long.
We should play it, Jeff.
So, I mean, I like their games, dude. Like, I would be down. I would be down.
So I can't. I too cannot. My wife, your wife, can play video games. She knows. She understands the mechanics.
Yeah,
mine does not get it. Like, she, like a controller to her is like a foreign object. So like, I just like you are, like, if you play with her, you'd end up like killing your wife. My wife's just like, I don't know how this works. Like, so
I you know, she was kind of like that though. Like, when we first met, it was just like you would like do like try Tetris, you know, or you know, it would like go from that. But yeah, I'm not trying to I don't know. Yeah, I'll play with you.
Let's do that. All right, so that's best game we played not from 2024. Moving on to best story, we have three games here. Dungeons of Hinterberg, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, and Metaphor Refantasio. I added the last one. I think I added Indy too. I'm going to concede on Metaphor because I haven't finished it yet. But what I have played of the 15 hours has been absolutely fantastic. It's a JRPG turn-based game, but very intricate storyline, very intricate characters. You are at the beginning of the game, the king is murdered by somebody in his court, and you know, everyone kind of knows who, but nobody can, like, you know, prove it that this is the guy. So you end up working with somebody else to kind of, like, take this guy down. And in doing so, the king who died, he comes back, he saves this guy and is like, no, this isn't how we're going to do this. He wants to be king. I don't want you to, like, murder the would-be king, but we're going to have it as a contest. So, like, whoever the people choose is who's going to be king. And there's X amount of time for that person to become king. It's all, like, magic based. So, like, you can see where these people rank. So, like, then you choose to, like, enter this contest to become the king. So you can get close to this guy to kill him. Really cool storyline, really cool characters. I just got done a mission in the game where you take on a bounty and you go there and they're like, oh, all the kids in the town are being kidnapped and you got to find out who did it. And they, like, lead you on this wild goose chase to find this guy. And he's not the guy. He's not been kidnapping anybody. It's actually the person that hired you in the first place. She's been feeding all the kids in the town to what she views as her baby, which is this giant fucking monster baby thing that, like, eats people.
Yeah, monster baby.
Really cool story. Wild, but I haven't finished it, so, like, I can't say this is the best story of the year, but I wanted to make sure we mentioned it. And I think I added Indiana Jones as well. And what I'll say about Indy, having finished it, and I know Tony hasn't finished it yet, so I don't want to
very spoil close anything to the end, for him. Yeah, but
this is, I put this as, like, the third best Indiana Jones story. Like, I put it above
one. What?
Yeah, it is for me, it's Raiders, Last Crusade, and then The Great Circle.
Mm.
The other movies are all below it. It's an excellent Indiana Jones story. But it's an Indiana Jones story, so you kind of know what you're getting.
Sure.
So, Jeff, you added Dungeons of Hinterberg. Tell us about that.
I mean, I'm like, famously at this point, like, against narrative and video games. But this, to me, felt done right because, well, for one, I actively try to ignore what the story is. I skip. And, like, this is, like, all text-based, like, old-school Zelda. But I think, like, the narrative and the gameplay are kind of, like, woven together, like, really well in a way. And so it's just so simple. You're on vacation. Like, the story of the game is you are on vacation. And this vacation spot is a place where people go to be adventurers and defeat dungeons. Now, though, like, just, like, instantly, like, drew me in to the sense of place, and I was, like, interested to see what, like, people had to say, and, like, everyone you ran into was, like, there's, like, the little goth girl who's, like, I hate this fucking island, it's a bunch of tourists, you know what I mean? Like, that was fun about it. But then as you get deeper into the game, like, there's, like, a twist to it, like, you find out what's actually going on with this, like, magical tourist island, and I thought that was fun too. Like, I don't know, like, Chris, you played through the whole game too. Like,
yeah, cool story. I like this presentation a lot. Similar to how Metaphor and Persona do things, like, it breaks. So there's the two. So you go and explore in the morning, you do the dungeons. In the morning,
I love
and
that. Yes.
And then in the afternoon, you get Persona's a little bit
like that too. Yeah,
like where it splits up your day into two different activities.
It's so perfect in dungeons, though. It's so perfect. It's like you go out to a dungeon, hang out with people at night, like and like so you feel like you're on vacation. Like you go do a fun thing in the day, and then you hang out with the people at night, and then you gain something out of that. Like
and the hanging out isn't ever more than like a few minutes. It's not.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a complaint that I guess you could level against Metaphor is that some of the story bits,
yeah,
are long. Sure. Like that, there was a point a day ago where, you know, I played 2 hours of the game, and like it was a cutscene, a whole bunch of dialogue. I had like one fight in that 2 hours. This is never that, right? It's you come in, you have like a couple, you maybe choose a dialogue option or something, and then it's like, all right, well, you did what you did. Now you got your bonus here. You became a little bit closer of a friend with this person, and now you go to bed. And then, like, you can actually choose something to do there as well. Do you want to stay up late, watch TV? Do you
want to read a book?
And then, like, choosing that gives you, like, stuff and informs you a little bit more about the world that's going on, and the way they kind of deliver the story with how you level up. And, like, you're at the beginning, it's just, you're just like, hey, this is cool. But then, like, you're slowly becoming the hero of this town because, like, you're investigating like the secret dungeon, and it's pretty neat. It's a really cool way to tell a story, I think, in a game.
That's what I was trying to convey, all that. And then like where it goes, like, I, you know, not spoiling it, I guess, but like where it goes is really neat too, I think. I mean, it's typical, but it's neat.
You played a bunch of it, right?
Yes, and I mean, you folks have basically said what I was going to say. Again, pretty much what I said, but I think it was last year. I remember Avatar: The Last Airbender came out on Netflix, and I remember my big complaint with that was they kind of got rid of the characters for the story, and it was just plot with very little characters. And I think Dungeons of Hindenburg was very smart in being like, yes, there's an overall arc, there's an overall story going on, but what this is really is about is the characters in this town, and you get into
know them. Yeah.
And like being able to sit down and have conversations with these people. And it was beneficial for you as well on that perks and stuff, but like, this is a character-driven story.
How many video games have you played that have hit on the topic of like living in a tourist town and like what that's like?
Tony, do you have any opinion here? You didn't nominate anything here, so.
I mean, I didn't get enough into Pinterberg to really appreciate the story. I think indie story is fantastic. I agree with Chris. It's probably the third best indie story. But as compared to the others, I can't really make a comparison.
I'm just a bit disappointed. Everybody knows it's the Last Crusade, then it's Raiders, but that's another topic for another day.
it's not, but okay.
That is the order.
You do you, Earl. I will gladly take Raiders any day of the week, but.
I want to fight.
I will take it as any day of the week as well after I watch Last Crusade. I mean,
I'm gonna not weigh out of this.
That's fine. I really like indie. I am fine with Dungeons of Hinterberg winning here, though.
I have not played Metaphor Indie. I did not like the gameplay. I think Dungeons of Hinterberg is just like, it's just kind of amazing, like how captivating the storytelling was for being Zelda style storytelling. Like, you know what I mean? The boxes with people talking, but you're still just like into it. Like, I don't know. And that's coming from me. Come on, we gotta get into it.
I mean, I am glad that you like a game that had a story, Jeff.
Yeah,
like,
it's very rare.
I'm willing to concede just on that one. Moving on to disappointment of the year, we have four things here. Well, three things, one of which is the same as the other thing. But the Plucky Squire, Suicide Squad, killed the Justice League, Avowed with about 4 exclamation points.
Yes, very much.
And all the games that. All the fall games delayed until February, which I believe Avowed with the 4 exclamation points falls under.
Yes.
Avowed does come out, I think, February 18th.
And then Assassin's Creed got delayed further into the year. So
So it opens up a little bit of room for Avowed, actually.
Yeah.
But Earl, tell us about the Plucky Squire.
Yes.
game people like.
Huh?
People don't like this game?
No.
Lots of people don't.
Yeah, it's more style than substance. And I wouldn't even mind that so much. It's that the game never shuts up. Like,
very
tough. I hate that.
It's not a long game. It's not a complicated game. And the game
let me
like,
play.
Hey, remember, you can do this thing. Like, yes, you just showed it to me on the previous page. I know. The puzzles are so dumb. It's like, hey, take a word from this part of the book to that part of the book and watch what it does. It's like, yay. The combat never evolves. Like, the 3D section is very basic. It is just, again, I actually looked this up. This game was announced in 2022, I want to say, at Devolver Digital E3 showcase. And I was just like, this game looks excellent.
Great trailer. Radar.
Yeah. It was, I think it was on Nintendo Direct. I think it was on State of Plays. And every time it just looks fantastic. And again, the game looks fantastic. We'll get to that in a bit. But I played it and I'm just like, oh. And it's not a bad thing. Everybody, like, there needs to be first video games for everybody, which is fair. You know, like, there are going to be 5-year-olds and 10-year-olds who are playing their first video game. I just did not expect this to be that. I did not expect this to be, like, every time you go somewhere, the game has to talk to you. And in the most dumbed down way. Like, there are times where, like, it would zoom across the map and, like, hey, look at this thing. Without saying that, but
walk down this path and you will see it.
And it's a very idiot because it's a storybook, so everything is only 2 pages.
Yeah.
But it will still zoom across and be like, hey, there's a thing over here you should check out. It was just disappointment from what it looks like, what it wants to be. Like, again, the idea of like a 2D game that you can go into a 3D realm, that's fun. The idea that's an interactive storybook, that's a great idea. And it just does not know the execution on any of that.
All right. Why are we disappointed in Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League?
Yes, I did not add that.
Sorry, I added it.
Okay.
Hey, it was me.
Two people.
No, it was me.
Tony, why do we add this?
I am disappointed in a number of reasons. Number one, why do studio executives consistently insist on making games like this anymore that just suck and are based on something that's like years old? I just don't understand it. Why are they consistently misusing properties? It just makes me sad. That's the entire.
Okay. Understand.
The entire in advance, coming out with the movie. Remember that awesome Wolverine game? Anyone remember that?
Wolverine Origins, yeah.
Yeah, that's fucking good as shit.
Good game, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing, and I don't know if Tony was going to get to this, is it did tie up one of the marquee gaming studios for almost a decade making this. And
that had made other great games that were nothing like
it. They're done.
Yes.
They're cooked. And as the kids say.
And dead. It ruins their reputation. But more so than that, it's also like, oh, this game didn't hit. You got to get rid of people. And that's always terrible because I'm sure it did not have to be Batman. I'm sure they could have made another game in the Arkham vein that would have been great, you know, a very focused single-player adventure. And instead, and this is coming from somebody who's actually enjoying his time with Suicide Squad, but this could have been the Warner Brothers Montreal, the people who did Arkham Origins, or somebody. You did not have to have your honestly, it is WB Studios, marquee studio, behind NetherRealms, tied up for a decade on a game that, I mean, it will be dead in like a week. Less than a year after its release, it will be dead.
So, I will say one thing, Earl. They couldn't put the Montreal studio on it because they had them on Gotham Knights, which is basically kind of the same type of game, right? Like, open world squad based combat type thing, but that one had heroes as opposed to these villains.
Yes, and it's also just so funny because I remember, I think Arkham City had it, and then Arkham Knight introduced like a co-op multiplayer mode, and just being like, "Oh, this combat, does that actually work?" And to be fair, that's not what they did, but your combat system was top of the line, and then you guys just do this, and it's like everybody uses guns, which is also just one of those things. As a nerd, I'm just like, you have a guy named Captain Boomerang, and his weapon of choice is a gun.
Yeah, why isn't he throwing boomerangs?
Yes.
A
giant shark man who can eat and clobber people. He shoots guns. Whatever.
Sure he does.
Jeff, tell me about Avowed!
Yeah, Avowed, I mean, there's very few games like I get excited for anymore, and you tell me fantasy RPG, I'm in. Obsidian, I'm in, you know. So I've been waiting for this for like a long time. Like I have a kind of a lot of faith this will be fun. It got delayed. And I guess that kind of falls into the other category of biggest disappointment. Your shit got delayed. The thing you wanted to play was delayed.
That is disappointing. Tony, was there anything besides Assassin's Creed that kind of I think you added all the fall games delayed until February, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing, it didn't have a date, but Civ was supposed to come out this fall and did not make it.
That's now February. February 7th? Something like that? Like early February, I think.
Like 14th, something like that. It's like okay. The second week.
Is there one here that's jumping out at you guys? Like, nothing.
Delays!
They are always disappointing.
No Switch 2, where the fuck was that?
Also delayed to announce this year, Jeff. Just the announcement. Who knows when it's actually coming?
Yeah.
I'm good with delays if you guys are.
Delays.
All right. Best non-gaming media. So brief history of this. This is stuff is video game related, but not a game. So a TV show, a book, a movie. I think we have TV shows and movies for this year. We have a large selection. Fallout, the TV show, Sonic the Hedgehog 3, Secret Levels, Knuckles television, Knuckles TV show, Borderlands and Arcane.
Okay, before we get started,
yeah,
I just need to ask, and no judgment, who added Borderlands? You know, just I'm just curious.
I added Borderlands to fill up some space.
Okay,
it did fill up some space.
I will say, not the worst video game movie I've ever seen. That is all positives I will say about Borderlands.
It's fine. It is
it's the most passable movie ever.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I did not hate it. Hence, it is on this list of non-gaming media. It is not the best.
Okay.
But we mentioned it.
Yes. I will also just throw it out there as well. Knuckles is very much in that same boat.
I watch Knuckles, so.
I did watch Knuckles, and I want my time back. Which the thing that I don't want to say makes me mad because it doesn't make me mad. The thing that's just so weird about Knuckles is that it came out last year. It's set between Sonic 2 and 3. It has no bearing on Sonic 3 whatsoever. Like, you could watch Sonic 3 and nothing in Knuckles would matter. So I don't understand the whole point of having a Knuckles spinoff. When Knuckles is the supporting character in this show, the human character, Wade Whipple, is kind of the big star, the big, he gets the big hero's arc or whatever in this show.
Okay.
And then
Knuckles is just kind of the tag-along?
Yeah.
Weird.
Infamously, I think there's an episode, I think episode 5, where Knuckles is in it for like maybe 3 minutes.
That's wild.
It. Yeah.
So I'm crossing out Knuckles and Borderlands. I don't think either of them are going to pull here. Did anybody watch Arcane, or did we just add that because like it looked really cool?
I heard it's good. I didn't add that.
None of us watched it. I'm going to cross that out too. Leaving us with Fallout, Sonic the Hedgehog 3, and Secret Levels. I don't think Secret Levels wins here. It's a really neat idea to do an anthology series of animation based on video game properties. I think some of them are really good. Some of them are not so great. But that's what you get with any anthology. Unless you guys are like, yeah, no, Secret Levels is the best thing ever.
I think you and I are the only ones who watched it. And...
yeah.
That was my pick, bro. No, I didn't say it.
Like, if it was, Jeff, then we can leave it on here.
I mean, but... my pick is pretty easy, guys. And,
So before we get to what I'm assuming is your pick, Jeff.
Yeah.
Earl and I both saw Sonic the Hedgehog 3. We talked about it last week, I think, on the show. It's fine. It's good. Like it's enjoyably fun.
It's enjoyable. And I forgot if I talked about this last week. It's a weird thing for me that I think Sonic is, I feel like I'm inversely proportional to everybody else where I think movies get worse each one. Like, I mean, they're around the same scale, but the more they try to make it like the video games, the less interest, because it becomes more fan service than movie.
Yeah.
Where I think the first one is a really solid kind of animal creature buddy road trip movie. And then the second one introduces Tails and Knuckles and the Master Emerald and all this other stuff. And
it has I'm staying away then.
It has a huge side shot with the wedding and stuff like that. This one, I feel, again, like the prime example I think about, and again, spoilers for a 2-year-old, 3-year-old movie at this point. The prime example for me is like, they bring back Dr. Robotnik, which, of course, he's the main bad guy. But there's a scene where they're like, didn't you die?
Yes.
And that's it. They don't answer the question or anything. They just, like, ask it because, and that's it. They move on. There's no answer, which is fine. I'm fine with that. But, like, the fact they brought it up and they just lampshade in the fact, like, yeah, okay, he's back. Yeah. We're moving on. It's kind of, like,
absolutely hysterical that they just kind of, like, throw that out there.
Yeah, we're here for no answer. We're not here for like to make a story beat. And I feel like that happens sometimes. Again, I don't think we need a 5-minute Jim Carrey dance sequence.
What was weird? Jim Carreys too.
Yes. So.
But it's still a fun movie. I think I'm with you, Earl. I think I like 2 more than the 1, but I think 3 was like a step down, and I agree with you that the more they video gamify it, the less good the movie itself is going to be, I think. But that leaves us with Fallout, which I believe is what you're going to vote for. Tony, I assume that's what you were going to go for.
Absolutely. It's the only choice.
I think we all enjoyed the Fallout TV show quite a bit. Anybody want to talk about it?
It captured everything and gave like those like little Easter eggs for fans without being obnoxious about it. I don't know. I just surprised they made it work. Like I just never seen any video game thing that worked and it did. And you had Walter Goggins. What else do you want?
I think because actually I want to say with The Last of Us. And I think Last of Us and Fallout are both just great examples of what's needed. The Last of Us is very much not a 1-to-1, but it's a very
straight. Yeah, and this captured the spirit of it. Like, yes, this is more just like the spirit of Fallout. It was great.
Exactly, and that's what works. It's like, I feel like this would have been an asset product if they had just straight up made Fallout 3 or Fallout 4. TV show. It's like,
absolutely.
No, we kind of have the elements. You can play around with it. There are ways to surprise people. There's ways to introduce stuff that people want. And it works. And I think it is just a really strong show for being in the universe. And also, you know, we'll see how far, you know, see how far this comes, because they're very adamant that this is in the video game universe. But like, there's nothing in the games, nothing in the show, I should say, that's like very much like, oh, this has to be or this isn't. But it makes fans happy.
Yeah, no, because it takes place on the West Coast. Like, the closest it is Vegas. Like,
yeah.
Like all the games kind of take place in the same universe. It's just at different time points and when the vaults open, and different eras of the wasteland. So, yeah. So it can be in the game universe, but it doesn't really matter. Tony, anything to add to Fallout?
Not really. I just really, really liked it.
All right.
Perfect, perfect show.
Looking forward to season 2, which is unfortunately currently delayed because of the terrible fires in California. But be looking forward to it once we get it. Moving on to best remake remaster. We got a bunch here. So there was clearly a bunch of stuff, games that came out from previous years that were remade or remastered this year. Epic Mickey Rebrushed, Shadow Cross Sonic Generations, or is it Sonic versus Shadow Cross Shot? I don't know. Which one is it?
Yeah,
it's one of those. Silent Hill 2, Mario versus Donkey Kong, Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door, Dead Rising, and Age of Mythology Retold.
Okay, just for clarity, it's Sonic X Shadow Generation.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
That's what I said. That's what I put.
No, Shadow X Sonic.
I'll talk about that one first because I just think that, like, that falls into, like, the Bowser's, what is it called?
Bowser's Fury. Like a
category where it's like, you got a new game with it, and the new game was excellent. It's 3 hours long, but the new game is excellent, you know? So, like,
is that how long a Shadow piece takes, Jeff?
Yeah, it's like 3.5 hours. Yeah, it is a new game. It's its own thing. And like after I beat it, I started Sonic Generations, and it's like, yeah, it is definitely improved on it, like by a lot. So I don't know. I think it's in the running. I know what the obvious pick here is, which is I think Silent Hill 2. And I'll let it rest on that.
I don't. Like, I added Silent Hill 2. I think I'm the only one that actually played it, too.
Yeah, I've not played it.
It's a good remake of Silent Hill. I think they fucked some things up in it. It's way more combat heavy than the original. And the combat's not great. It wasn't in the original either. It's not great here. It's just like the enemies are way more aggressive. There's way more enemies. Even in the early going. And so to the point where I have not finished it yet.
Weird.
I kind of found that a little bit annoying, but it is a beautiful recreation of Silent Hill 2. But yeah, for me, the one I enjoyed the most out of these was Epic Mickey Rebrush.
Wow. You played through it?
Played through it. Went through, fixed all the animatronics, Donald, Goofy, Daisy.
Shit, man, I gotta play this.
It's a ton of fun. It controls great. It's like, it gets rid of the problems that I had with the original, which was the, you know, cause when you were using the paint,
yeah,
like you kind of use the motion control, like you point at the screen. I did not like that. Didn't necessarily work for me. Now it's all just tied to your sticks. I think it works a whole lot better. Just feels more natural to play that way. And I had, I think it looks great. I really enjoyed Epic Mickey Rebrush. Mm. And you know, we've been releasing the classic shows, and 10 years ago, you loved Epic Mickey.
I still love it. Now you got me wanting to buy it again.
Yeah, it's really good. I think you should. But why don't you guys tell me about these other four down here?
Well, I added Paper Mario to Thousand Year Door.
Okay.
And I'm just going to give it to Star Wars and also take it away real quick. and it's a double-edged sword. it does not add a lot, but it just reminds, it's a really great game. Fundamentally, it's just a great game. Like, what they added were very basic quality of life adjustments. There are warp pipes to take you from different zones to make it easier to kind of backtrack near the end of the game. Like I had said earlier, there's enhanced music and improved graphics, but fundamentally, it is the same game it was 20 years ago on the GameCube. It's just a fantastic game then, and it's a fantastic game now. It holds up remarkably well. If you have never played it, I recommend it. If you played it on the game, I recommend checking it out again. But yeah, I mean, as far as remakes and remasters, there's not much to do.
Okay, it's just a really good game getting re-released with a
some
couple
improvement. Yeah,
yeah. Jeff, tell me about Mario versus Donkey Kong, because that is a legitimate, like an actual remake, right? Like that's not a remaster, kind of like Paper Mario was. Did we lose Jeff?
Yeah. Bye, Jeff.
Jeff. Oh no. Well, Tony, you've told us about Age of Mythology Retold.
Yeah, like I said, it's an excellent. Like, it makes the game so much more than it was when it first came out. I think it's like the perfect remake.
Nice.
So,
Jeff, you back? No. So I kind of wanted to hear about Dead Rising, which was him. I added that for him, but and Mario versus Donkey Kong. I don't know. To me, with what we've talked about, I think this is maybe either Shadow Generations or Age of Mythology here.
I want to give Tony a victory, but Jeff isn't here to defend himself.
I'm back.
Yeah. Oh, let me win.
Jeff, tell me about Mario versus Donkey Kong.
I wouldn't nominate it.
You did nominate it. Okay, so we're gonna just cross that off. Yeah. I added Dead Rising for you because I knew you played it.
I wouldn't nominate it.
Okay, so those two not there.
Well, because that game, I'm sorry, it's not good anymore. It's just not.
Oh wow. Anyways,
go ahead.
Okay, so you don't even think it's a good game.
It's like they did a good job on it, but you're like polishing a turd.
Wow. All
right, sorry, Dead Rising.
You liked the original Dead Rising.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah,
originally.
I did. Yeah. Things change. We grow.
All right. So I don't know. I think we're at Age of Mythology or Shadow Generations.
I mean, Shadow was new, it's fun. We all love platformers, don't we?
Yeah, part of me just kind of wants to give it to Shadow Generations because it does what, you know, a remake or remaster does. It takes a game that I think was well-received, but, you know, it's a Sonic game, so it had some flaws, improved on that, and then added additional content, and then doing the other thing of actually not tying into the movie, but kind of reintroducing the character of Shadow and his backstory to a new generation of gamers in time for the movie. Because I think the game itself is like 10, more than 10 years old. The Sonic would have been, what, 2012?
I think we 2011. Talked about this.
2011, yeah.
2011, so 13 years ago.
I mean, I think Tony kind of said Age of Mythology does the same thing outside of the fact that it doesn't have a movie. But it does exactly what Earl said outside of it reintroducing Shadow to people, just like it's a classic game that adds new material to it. It looks better, plays better. I don't really care if you guys can't come to a not decision. Sonic. What?
No.
Yeah, you keep saying it's not Sonic. We know it's not Sonic, Jeff.
I'm saying that's like an automatic winner. Sonic and you get to play as Shadow.
I don't know if Sonic being an automatic winner has ever been a thing anybody said.
No. I'm
Earl, you're supposed to be on my side here.
I'm on your side. I was
Earl is siding with you for Shadow. I think we're split here.
I can't believe Silent Hill 2 is not the obvious runaway. Okay.
Because only one person played it.
I was the only one that played it.
I know, and you were like,
I didn't love it, so.
I would agree with you, Chris. I have not played it, but I totally agree with you. And you were just
Are you saying you want to vote for Silent Hill?
I say I want to vote for Shadow. I say Shadow's earned his day in the sun.
All right, well, I'm going to give Shadow a win, and you can share it with Tony.
All right.
So how's that? So we can move on.
Amazing.
Looking game. We got another six pack here for best looking game. Astrobot, Path of Exile 2, Indiana Jones, Black Myth Wukong, The Plucky Spire, Squire, not Plucky Spire, Plucky Squire, and Metaphor Refantasio. I will drop Metaphor out quickly. I just want to, like, I think it has an awesome style to it. Yeah. It looks fantastic. It is an anime come to life. Like, it has this very kinetic look to it. The menus all look like they're lively. I know that is a thing that this studio does, with Persona. It's the first time it's actually clicked for me. And I was like, yeah, this looks fucking amazing. But I think there's probably stronger ones here that are going to get more support. So
yeah.
Earl, tell us about the Plucky Squire, because that was a, despite being disappointing, very good looking game.
It's a
really, you guys think this song?
I think it's one of those games. One, I think the style is great. I think it's really, but it's also one of those games where the style fits the aesthetics of the actual game and narrative. It ties it all into it, because it is a storybook. You are going through this book that's written about the hero of the game, and it's very hand drawn. And then when you kind of come out into the real world, it's a 3D fully polygonal. I like the fact that it's set on, like, you know, it's a children's book, so it's set on like a kid's desktop. So you get, like, you know, like environmental stuff, like globes, erasers, rulers, kind of create the platforms and the way you elevate. I think it's a very uniform thing. Again, my feelings of the game aside, the style of it is really aces.
Nice. Jeff, Black Myth Wukong.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys, I don't think any of you guys have played this game, but if you've seen any of it, like, it's pretty impressive. Like, it's kind of like Dark Souls type gameplay, but, like, they put it in such small levels, like narrow levels, where they're able to just, like, crank the graphics up to like 11, and it just looks like ultra real, like, you almost looks like you're tripping on acid or something. And then on top of it, like, the art design, which is a separate thing, is also really good. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah,
the game is worth checking out just for this aspect of it. So it has to be in the running.
I mean, I haven't played it, and I've only looked at it, and it's not my type of game anyway. But visually, yeah, it looks great. Like,
it's pretty impressive. Like,
high fidelity character models look phenomenal. Super colorful. It's an impressive looking piece of software. Tony, I don't know if you or I added Indiana Jones.
I think I did.
Okay, so Jeff, do you want to talk about Indiana Jones?
I think it's a great looking game. Like, it looks like that AAA game. So, like, how can you not include it, right? Like, I don't. You guys, if you guys don't agree with that, move along, but
I think it looks really good. I bet it looks better on Tony's computer than it does on my Xbox, though.
It looks pretty really? Awesome on my computer.
I think it's a really good looking game as well. Jeff, Path of Exile 2.
Yeah, picture Diablo 4, but just on a base level, like, it just looks better. And then when all the effects are going, it looks insane. Like, it it has better art style. Like at first glance, like, if you just saw a screenshot, you'd be like, yeah, whatever. It's another one of those games. But, man, like, the graphics, I think, are, like, one of the first things I noticed starting playing it, I'm like, holy shit, how is this free-to-play game you know, eventually, like, look better than Diablo, and it does. So,
I'll take your word for it. Like the clips you sent me, I'm like, it
looks similar,
similar to what you said. I was like, you know, and I haven't, you know, I have not dug into it. I've not explored the universe. I haven't played it yet. So, like, I was like, this kind of looks like Diablo from a glance. Like,
go ahead.
It's just less arresting than, say, like, you know, Black Myth Wukong, which is like when you see a screenshot of that, it's like, this fucking looks awesome.
It's inarguable. Yeah. I can't really argue with any of that. It's just when you actually play it, like, compared to Diablo 4, you're like, damn, this is like a huge step up, and it's free. Like, so, like, it sticks out to you. But there's no arguing. Black Myth is the more technically impressive. For sure.
And then Astrobot, which I feel is in some ways similar to the Plucky Squire. I just think it is more technically superior to the Plucky Squire. But it fits very well, kind of like what Earl was saying.
Really? This is my pick.
Yeah, no, I think it is a better looking game than the Plucky Squire, but I think, like, Earl's argument for the Plucky Squire is similar here with Astrobot. It fits very well with, like, the art style for Astrobot looks great. It also is way more high fidelity. The environments are beautiful. They're colorful.
It looks tactile. Like the little, like, pellets and stuff that drop on the ground. Like real. Like, this is easily the best looking game
to me. Yeah, like when you hit an enemy and, like, it busts into the voxels. Yeah. Like, it's, like, super cool looking.
We're going through, like, the sprinkles. Like, there's a level where there's sprinkles all over the ground. Like, you know, they would put on ice cream. It looks like, that looks like real candy. Like, I would eat it.
Jeff just licking his TV screen. I agree. I think it's a phenomenal looking game here. Do we have any strong arguments one way or the other for it's best Astrobot looking game?
For me.
I think that's where I'm at.
I think Jeff is the best looking game.
Thank okay.
you. So he says Astrobot.
We said you, but
that's not what I said.
We'll count it for Astrobot. Earl, anything you strong with Plucky Squire?
I enjoy Plucky Squire, but I think, I'm sorry, I'm not saying that. Wow. I enjoy the style of Plucky Squire. There we go. But yeah, I'm fine with.
All right. Well, Astrobot coming in as our best looking game. Next one, game of the year in any other year. Real quick, it's The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom, because the game there.
So we're saying it's not game of the year.
No, that's not the point of this category. So this category came up last year because there were so many great games that there were games that came out that year that normally would be in consideration. It does not. It's in consideration for game of the year.
Yeah,
because I don't think there's that many. Yes, I don't think this is eligible.
Is it on your top 10 list, Jeff?
It's not my top 10, yeah, for sure, but
to me,
like, it got overshadowed by, like, several games this year. So
yeah, and I think that's what the topic is. Like, I'm thinking of, like, oh, like, it wasn't even nominated for, like, the Game Awards Game of the Year,
and it's great. It's a great game. Like, it came out like 2021 or something. Like, it would have been like Game of the Year easy. Like.
Okay. Well, it's the only thing we had here, so I don't really care one way or the other. outside of somebody,
I don't know what rant, one is.
Was that you, that's Tony?
That was me. That's what I'm saying. Is this game? This game should not be your rant.
So it wins. Move along.
It doesn't. The fact that there's only one game that fits in this category says that there's not, like,
is that a crop category of every
games
year
that are squeezing out. Yes. This is,
there wasn't a ton of games.
Yes. This game should be in consideration of game of the year. This isn't like the runner up for game of the year category. And that's kind of what that seems like it's being used as here.
Oh, no. I think at least in my head, how I think of it is like. It's a weird one to have before we do the game.
I like it.
But yes, last year was much easier because last year there was like. Yes, the big one was Baldur's Gate, but Starfield was out there, and Spider-Man was there. It's like, yes, there's so many games that, like, in any year would have been instantly this is game of the year, but there's like five of those instantly. So it's this is one I think from next year we'd have to keep track of as the year goes through. Because I think one that it wouldn't have been a game of the year contender, but I think it would have been a dark horse, Prince of Persia, if it had released later in the year. Because I feel Final Fantasy today, and like it came out. I'm like, yeah, it came out in January. I feel like January, you just kind of forget it exists.
Yeah, we will talk about Prince of Persia next week.
Yes,
because it is high on my game of the year list, but. But yeah, like it's a game that could be forgotten.
Yeah,
which is just funny about Zelda, because Zelda came out in October and
it kind of got
fine. I didn't finish it because I moved on to something else really like there were a bunch of games that kind of came out in October and I moved on to something else then and I just haven't gone back to it yet and forgot about it, which just unfortunate.
It's great though. It's really good.
Yeah, no, and I enjoyed everything I played about it. But
and I think this year, depending on if it comes out or not, is I think GTA 6 can take up a lot of oxygen really quickly. So it might be a good year for.
Oh, yeah. If GTA 6 comes out, like it's going to be very hard for any other game to breathe.
Between the potential of GTA 6 and a new console launch, there's a lot of space being taken up by limited resources this year for gamers. So
yeah, all right, moving on to and more our DLC of the year. We have a five pack here. Shadow of the Erdtree, which is Elden Ring's DLC. Vampire Survivors, Jeff has all of it. The DLC that came out for Vampire Survivors this year was the Contra and Castlevania DLC.
And probably like more. Like constantly updating.
They are. Those were the two big expansions.
Ones. Both awesome.
There are like four other expansions that have come out, and like they also did a an Among Us one, but that was 2023. That wasn't in 2024. Contra and Castlevania were the two big ones for 2024.
And they're both awesome. Contra was great. At Castlevania, I need to dig into more, but
yeah, there's so many characters, Jeff.
But it's just this game never dies. It's so great.
Diablo 4, Vessel of Hatred, which was the first expansion for Diablo 4. I added in Fallout London here. I don't know if that counts or not.
Sure.
But
not really DLC.
Yeah, it's an unofficial mod, but it is a full ass game. I thought it was worth talking about here.
Assuming you can make it work.
I did make it work. I made it work on the Steam Deck. I got it going.
I feel like and more. I feel like it fits the and more. It doesn't necessarily need to be DLC, but more additional content. So I do think that. But what Tony's saying, I guess, is like if it's not something that's easily accessible, that's a different kind of.
It's easily accessible. It's not easily doable. It's easily accessible. It's free. Like you can just go download it. You have to jump through some hoops to get it to run.
I think I have a different definition. I know what you're saying though. Like you can find it, but like in my head, I'm like, if you need to jump through hoops to get it to run, it's not accessible.
So, and I think Tony went though, when it first launched, it was really bad. It is much easier to get going now. There are installers that they have provided that will get it up and running for you. And I was able to get it running on a Steam Deck, which is not like, and it didn't take much to do it. It's just more than what Jeff would probably put into getting it to work. Like he's like, no, if I can't just press a button, it's not going to work.
Yes.
And you need to do a little bit more for Fallout London, but really neat. I don't think it wins here, but I think it's really cool that somebody went through like a lot of these fan-made mods. You hear about them, you hear about these projects, but they don't ever ultimately come out. And this one did, and it's a fully fleshed game. on the bones of Fallout 4. And the final nominee in this category is Alan Wake 2 Night Springs, which was the first of the two Alan Wake 2 DLCs. The second one, The Lake House, I hated. So,
ooh, that was a strong word. Not even this, like, hated.
Yeah, yeah, I absolutely despised that one. Did not enjoy it at all. Night Springs is fantastic. It is, it's episodic. It's three different, like, mini levels. They're not mini. They're like full size levels. They both take about an hour or two to complete the three different episodes, and they take place in the in-game TV show Night Springs, which is Alan Wake 2's kind of version of the Twilight Zone. It's cool. It's more Alan Wake 2. I really enjoyed it. But Jeff, tell us about Diablo 4 Vessel of Hatred.
Well, that was like, it's like a mini campaign. It's, you know, it's obviously not as long as like the main game, but it's fun.
One new act, right? Like,
yeah, it's one new act, but it's like six chapters, and you know,
okay,
it is longer than any act in, you know, in the main game.
Okay, well, that's good.
But mostly, it was fun to play as that new class. I can't even remember what it's called now. It's like, I don't even know. That new class was fun. Yeah, I don't know. It's not even my choice, though. That's the funny thing.
Well,
there's two on here that, like, actually, there's three on here. I don't think that any of y'all played.
Spiritborn, that's what it is.
What is it?
It's Spiritborn. The new captain.
Oh, Spirit. Yeah.
So, I didn't add any, but I did play Vampire Survivors, and I do have Vampire Survivors, so I'm just biased.
That's my pick, honestly. Like, because, like, Urtree to me was a disappointment. Diablo 4 is good. Vampire Survivors, like, I don't know, man. That's forever. And they keep giving you new shit. It's amazing.
Yes. And again, it's cheap, but I think the Castlevania one's the big one because it's so, like, so much of it pays homage to Castlevania. It's just great that it gets the crossover.
Yeah, yeah.
But I played the Contra one. I'm like, this shouldn't work. And it somehow still does.
It's so good.
I like that it's not just like, oh, here's a new character or here's a new stage. It's like, no. Here's a new stage. Here's some new characters. Here's
new adventure. New weapons,
here's some new enemy types.
They give you a whole adventure to play through. Like, yeah. It's like its own game. Like, I love that about it.
Yeah.
Both Contra and Castlevania are like that.
Yeah. But that's what it's just so great that it got into the point where people are coming to it. I mean, I guess these are both Konami, but like the fact that they can work with such a major studio and be like, yes, we're going to give you this IP that you were ripping off anyhow. And it's like, no, we're respecting that. And you're gonna make this fun. You're gonna make this great. You're gonna have some fantastic music added to it. You're gonna bring back. I mean, you folks both. I think you and Jeff both played the new Contra game, and I would say this is probably the better Contra game that came out.
Yeah, it is. And so you're backing me, man. We're saying Vampire Survivors.
I'm off of Vampire Survivors. I said I didn't add any of these, but Vampire Survivors would be the choice I'd go with.
Hells yeah.
I'm fine with Vampire Survivors here. I love Vampire Survivors.
It's so good. Chris, play the new stuff.
2023 game of the year? I think we all love Vampire Survivors.
Last year was pretty stacked, like I said, with Spider-Man and Baldur's Gate and Starfield. Yeah,
2022. Just this game just sticks around.
Yeah,
it's so good. You gotta play the DLC, man. It's just like I could play that game for like ever, dude. It's so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great forever game. So many unlocks, and then like even after you kind of like find your perfect way of doing it, it's like, well, can I do it with a different character?
Yeah.
And with their weapons and see how to do that. So, yeah, all right, Vampire Survivors, all of it, Contra and Castlevania DLC is our DLC of the year. Bring us to our final
category of this long night. Best new game. We have five here. And I don't think this is going to be a long conversation, but we will get to it quickly. Balatro, Black Myth Wukong, Animal Well, Metaphor ReFantazio, and Dungeons of Hinterberg.
All pretty awesome. The only one I haven't played is Metaphor, but I'm sure it's awesome. And that's a nice stack of new games.
I agree. I mean, I'm Black Myth, but I think there's one here.
I think there's one, but we can pretend it isn't. So the one thing I will say, I feel like it should be a best new IP. Because best new game makes it sound like a game that came out this year, which all of these should be.
Yeah, they're all new games.
Yeah.
I like best new game.
Best.
Straight to the point.
No, like okay,
because like it's the best new, like a new idea, like best new thing. Like
that's why I said the best new IP makes more sense than best new game.
I don't like calling shit IPs.
All the games come out this year were
they're new games.
They're all new.
Indiana Jones is a new game.
How about best new game?
Okay, there we go.
Best new.
But yeah, I mean, I would have a conversation. It's 12:30. It's Balatro, right?
I don't think we're moving off of that, right? Balatro is the
I'm not moving off that game. I've been playing it every night for like the last 2 months now. I'm so back on it.
I went out to trivia tonight. I was talking to a friend before trivia, and I was like talking about like Balatro, and literally he pulled out his phone and starts saying it in front of me. I'm like, God damn it.
There's two phases of friends too, like where you're like, "Hey man, you should play Balatro," and they're like, "What is that?" Like, you know, like it's like the most crazy sounding thing ever. And then there's a friend who listened to you and is like, "Yeah, dude, that is the best." Like, I'm fucking playing. Like, they're obsessed with it. Like, it's like either you convince someone to play it or not, but it's hard because of the name.
I think we talked about this last week. It's very much like Vampire Survivors, where I think if
you play for 5 minutes, you're like, whatever.
Get it. But like, if you try to explain it to people, it's like a poker roguelike. I mean, that is essentially what it describes.
It's so hard to explain that.
I think even you were like, somebody was like, I don't even like poker that much. It's like, you don't really need to know poker.
Yeah.
That was me. I don't love poker, but
and yes. It's like, yeah, in some ways, I think it's beneficial not to know poker.
Because, it's fine, yeah, because like you don't think of it that way. You're just like, I'm trying to build what it's telling me to build.
I'm trying to build this one type of hand, and I know what this one type of hand is. Because it gets to a point where it's like, oh, I got a straight flush. I don't need any of the cards. The spades are neutered, so I'm gonna get rid of this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, no,
you could almost go in blind, like not knowing poker.
No pun intended.
I don't think you could go in blind without knowing poker. That would.
Yeah, you have to know both hands at least.
I don't know. If it says two of a, like, you know, two pair, like,
you're not going to know what it's straight, out, right? What's
you
a straight,
know what a full house is, or, yeah, you know, like, what a flush is.
You could, they have, like, the reference card you could look at. Like, okay. It's just, all the hands. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you could look at, like, what all the different hands are, like, and learn it like any other game that you don't know. You should know poker. Everyone should know poker. We're all human beings, right?
I hope so.
It's a part of the human.
Everyone should know poker. Yes.
Well, congratulations to our best new game, Balatro, which is bookending our awards here, because they also took the first award, best soundtrack score. We will recap these next week, because it is fucking late. So we'll recap these before we give our top tens next week. But thank you all for listening. It's been a good year for games. Go play some Vampire Survivors and Balatro and a bunch of other stuff. We'll be back next week. Jeff, say goodnight.
Good night.